Wednesday, June 27, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. So I saw an interesting statistic today and something that I thought was very relevant to bring up in the beginning here. Buying into it, hook, line, and sinker. Be that because they feel it is worthy of coverage or because they know it will get views. And there is something to be said for covering what the people want to see. But that's not what I'm here for. That's not what I do. I will simply never cover a story because it's popular or because it's what everyone is talking about. I will always cover what I feel is most relevant, current, and important to bring you the truth. And sometimes think those two things definitely intersect. But I say again, this entire thing is being used, manufactured, and pushed to keep you where they want you. And far too many are taking the bait. Just as Noam Chomsky said, the smart way to keep people passive and obedient is to strictly limit the spectrum of acceptable opinion, but allow very lively debate within that spectrum, which is exactly what we are seeing today. Just as I said in my article yesterday, we are being kept at a near constant state of emotional outrage for the primary purpose of overcoming our logic. We are at our least analytical when emotions are flaring. That is a simple fact that many of us are aware of if we can recognize the correlation between the way we act with politics and the way we, let's say, fly off the handle when we hear something salacious about a relationship we're in with another person. How people, you know, fly into a rage, as they would say, because they hear something. Whether or not it's even known to be true, people react emotionally and then later go back and go, oh yeah, I kind of overreacted there. The point being that our emotions circumvent our logic. And this is very acutely understood by these people using these topics to get you to react a very certain way, which is exactly why we have the mainstream media and politicians on either side vehemently arguing about this issue while all of them knowingly ignore what their own policies have not only maintained, but intensified overseas. And for our first story of the day, coming from antiwar.com, U.S.-backed coalition behind 67% of Yemeni children killed last year, according to a UN report. The annual Children in Armed Conflict Report from the United Nations details the deaths of Yemeni children in the Saudi-led invasion. Unsurprisingly, the overwhelming majority of the slain were killed by the U.S.-backed Saudi-led coalition. The United Nations report verified 552 children were killed in 2017 in Yemen. 67% of those children, 370, were directly attributable to the U.S.-backed Saudi-led coalition, predominantly the result of Saudi airstrikes. Saudi airstrikes killing civilians have been an ongoing problem since the invasion, yet none of this is ever covered by the mainstream media. Ask yourself why that is, especially with a direct involvement of the U.S. government. These UN reports on children casualties have been controversial in recent years because of their coverage of the Yemen conflict, while it's clearly a taboo topic for mainstream media. Saudi Arabia has repeatedly demanded the UN retract previous statements, and at times they actually have, despite them being completely factual. Making the statement fully public is also more difficult with the US and Britain, who are backing the invasion, generally supporting keeping it secret. We have to really realize that there's something going on there. Why would they want this to be secret? It's not like they're just pretending it's not important and just dismissing it. Oh, that's, you know, that's not really relevant. They are actively making sure that this topic is kept secret from you. That has to frustrate you when you realize not only how much the U.S. is involved, but that your tax dollars are going to kill these children. Now, that's not hyperbole. Our money that we pay to the government, the vast majority of which goes to the military, is funding the operations that take place here. And this because the U.S. is directly involved. Understanding that 67% of these children, 370, were killed due to U.S.-backed actions, that has to enrage you. Why doesn't that enrage these people fomenting this divide about immigrant children in cages? There's obviously a disconnect there when we can verifiably show that U.S.-backed actions are killing children, hundreds of them, yet we're discussing children in cages. Again, not that that's not a relevant topic, but why is this one over here taking up everything, all of the discussion? People are foaming at the mouth to argue with each other, tracking down Trump administration people while they're eating at restaurants to scream at them, while ignoring the fact that these children are dying in genocide is being committed in Yemen while the U.S. backs those efforts. How can you, if you cannot look at one thing and then look at the other and not realize that there is a disconnect there, you're being willfully blind to what's really going on. We have to realize how we are being pitted against each other about this immigration issue to ignore precisely the kind of thing that's happening in Yemen. That is something we have to recognize and reconcile with what's going on today. Moving on to the next story coming from ZeroHedge.com. DOJ won't release top secret Loretta Lynch intercept suggesting secret deal to rig Clinton probe. The Department of Justice is refusing to release intercepted material alleging that former Attorney General Loretta Lynch conspired with the Clinton campaign in a deal to rig the Clinton email investigation. According to Paul Sperry of Real Clear Investigations, quote, the information remains so secret that Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz had to censor it from his recently released 500-plus page report on the FBI's investigation of Clinton, and even withhold it from Congress. Not even members of Congress with top secret security clearance have been allowed to see the unverified accounts in which the head of the Democratic National Committee, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, allegedly implicates the Clinton campaign and Lynch in the scheme. Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch, which is suing the DOJ for the material, notes that, quote, it is remarkable how this Justice Department is protecting the corruption of the Obama Justice Department. Wasserman Schultz, Lynch, and Clinton have denied the allegations and characterized them as, of course, Russian disinformation. The secret intelligence document purports to show that Lynch told the Clinton campaign she would keep the FBI investigation on a short leash, a suggestion included in the Inspector General's original draft, but relegated to a classified appendix in the official report and entirely blanked out. This is something that, I mean, there's a lot of points to go over within this specifically. Very clearly that it's pretty, I mean, pretty widely regarded that Loretta Lynch broke a lot of rules by getting on that plane on the tarmac to talk with Bill Clinton while she was investigating Hillary Clinton, and all the things that she basically asked Comey to do by changing the words within the investigation. There was a lot of stuff happened here, as I pointed out, verifiably shown broken laws, how Comey broke the law, Loretta Lynch broke the law, Debbie Wasserman Schultz broke the law, verifiably so at this point. It's very clear what happened here, and yet this investigation moves forward. And now we are seeing them actually black out information and keeping it from Congress with top secret clearance. So again, this kind of makes you ask the question, who's really in charge here? How are the very people meant to investigate this being denied access to the very information that could implicate the people that they are supposed to be investigating? This bureaucratic runaround is so incredibly frustrating to see, and we have to again ask ourselves what's really going on here. I'm not always trying to imply that every single person involved in this and everyone in Congress are all lying and manipulating, which might be true, but the point is that there are very clearly people who are making sure that this does not go anywhere, that Comey, Clinton, Loretta Lynch, Wasserman Schultz are never really held accountable for any number of things. Whether, I mean, we recently saw the concept of the DNC primary where they actually said in court that they were allowed to rig it because they had no obligation to actually do what the voters wanted. That was actually their defense, and they won the case. It was dismissed. They are not held accountable for verifiably cheating Bernie Sanders out of the primary. This is what we're looking at today. That's why I constantly point at this specific case with the FBI as just another distraction, in the sense that it's not that it's not important. Very clearly, they broke the law, and very clearly, they need to be held accountable, but they're most likely not going to be. And this kind of case is just incredibly frustrating to see, as all of these people, as far as I'm concerned, are verifiable criminals that are allowed to walk away. Many of them still manipulating and influencing what's going on today. They're literally covering for these criminals that they're supposed to be investigating. And that should incredibly infuriate you as we continue to see this case drag on with plenty of evidence to actually hold them accountable. And everyone continues to point at the Russian phantom boogeyman as somehow responsible for every crime that they committed. Moving on to the next story coming from antimedia.com, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Jordan, Egypt back Trump's Israel-Palestine plan. Four Arab countries are backing Donald Trump's plan for a settlement between Israel and the Palestinian Authority, according to an Israeli newspaper, and are willing to sideline the PA's president to see it done. Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Egypt, and Jordan told envoy Jason Greenblatt and Jared Kushner, President Trump's son-in-law and the man charged with solving the Israel-Palestine issue, despite being a Zionist and wildly pro-Israel, that they are behind Washington's so-called deal of the century, a very Trump kind of label to put on something like this. Chief Palestinian negotiator Saeb Erekat, who has been at the forefront of efforts to end the Israeli occupation and set up a Palestinian state for decades, told Middle East Eye last week the deal of the century was no deal at all. He said Washington was already implementing its strategy on the ground, regardless of the Palestinians and their interests, which should give you an insight to what this is really all about, a very political move meant to pretend to look like they're trying to find some kind of a peace settlement, when really it's about the larger political people involved coming to an agreement that benefits them, but has nothing to do with what benefits the Palestinian people who are under an illegal occupation, really the only ones truly suffering in all of this, and they're the only ones not being regarded in how this deal actually comes out. Since taking the presidency, Trump has often framed himself as the man to finally negotiate an end to the Israeli-Palestine conflict. However, in recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital, he has been accused, and rightly so, of clearly favoring the Israelis and therefore excluding the U.S. from the role of an honest dealmaker, which is verifiably true when you look at people like Nikki Haley or John Bolton and the people that have overtly and multiple times spoken out about how they favor Israeli political motivations and very clearly support everything they're trying to accomplish. That's not a very honest position to be in when trying to represent two sides of an argument. The Americans have become, quote, nothing else than spokespeople for the Israeli occupation, according to Erekat, adding that the U.S. intention was to, quote, normalize Israeli apartheid. According to the Israeli Daily, a senior Jordanian official said Kushner and Greenblatt were told the, quote, Arab states will not be the ones to throw a wrench in the wheels of the peace process, and that the Palestinian Authority's president's continued refusal to work with the Americans will lead to a regional peace plan being launched without him. Which is just an incredibly hypocritical position to be in, to basically be claiming that you're working towards a peace process, yet willing to completely exclude one side of the argument. The Palestinian people's entire goals and positions and needs and wants don't even play into this discussion, despite the fact that, as I said, they're the main people being oppressed in this entire situation. It's not like the Israeli people are being harmed by what's happening here. They're the ones encroaching on the rightfully owned territory of the Palestinians. Yet in this entire supposed peace process, they're not even being represented, apparently, as they speak out and say this is not a good deal for us. And they say, okay, well, if you don't agree, you don't get included in the deal. We're just going to do what we want anyway and just disregard your wants and needs. It's ridiculous. But this has to continue to show us that this is not about doing something that's right. It's about putting another feather in the cap for the Trump administration and everyone else involved, claiming, even if it's not true, that they resolve the Israel-Palestine crisis. And that's what they're going to say if this deal goes through, even though it's not actually what's going to happen. Very frustrating. Yet another example of such a horrific situation going on that the U.S. is directly involved in that gets completely ignored while we focus on things that are largely irrelevant in the larger scheme. And that's what we have to continue to see. Moving on to the next story coming from mintpressnews.com, Washington's Syrian chess game leave Iraqi forces battling ISIS dead. Last Sunday, June 17th, local Syrian media reported that the U.S. coalition had bombed Syrian Arab Army installments near Abu Kamal. The bombing killed dozens of Syrian Arab Army, SSA, soldiers, as well as 22 fighters from the Iraqi paramilitary group known as the Popular Mobilization Forces, or PMF, which has been collaborating with the Syrian government to wipe out ISIS. Soon after the strike, which was launched from U.S.-occupied territory, by the way, the U.S. denied responsibility for the attack, asserting that the bombing was, quote, not a U.S. or coalition strike. then stating that Israel had been responsible for the strike. Israel, of course, declined to comment on the allegations, not denying it, just refusing to comment, which is kind of always their position, especially in regard to something like their nuclear weapons. It's just kind of like, we're not involved. Don't ask us questions. We're not going to answer them. We don't exist. And they just somehow get ignored in the international discussions. They seem to be in their own little circle of authority. It's a very weird situation. Yet new evidence gathered by Iraq's PMF from the site of the strike has shown that the attack was carried out by the U.S. coalition. After collecting fragments of missiles used in the strike, the PMF, which is sponsored by the government of Iraq, determined that the U.S. had in fact carried out the strike by firing missiles at the SSA and PMF position from a location near the Iraqi border. U.S. culpability for the attack would mean that it is the second time in less than a month that the U.S.-led coalition has attacked pro-government fighters targeting ISIS within Syria. The head of PMF's military operations asserted that the U.S. coalition had been informed by the Iraqi military of the PMF's location prior to the strike. So they are plainly stating that the U.S. coalition intentionally and deliberately targeted their troops in protection of the very terror group they claim to be fighting. Think about that for a second. This is not the first time this has happened. As the author notes of this article, U.S. actions near Abu Kamal betray the fact that it is seeking to expand the portion of Syria's northeast that it currently occupies illegally, an area that accounts for 30% of Syria's total landmass and includes the majority of the country's oil, gas, freshwater, and agricultural resources. You don't say. Always seems interesting how that just happens to be the area that they take. More importantly, it is the only border crossing that connects Syrian government-controlled territory with Iran through Iraq. Were the U.S. to take control of Abu Kamal, it would control Syria's most important border crossings, as it already controls the Syrian-Jordanian border crossing at Al-Tamf, which is interesting. It's yet another location that the U.S. has basically controlled very strategically, always claiming that it has to do with ISIS. But it just so happens that these places also seem to be the most important strategical places in Syria. Very clearly, what it has nothing to do with ISIS. And that's what this whole entire article is getting at. The U.S.'s interest in Abu Kamal and its recent targeting of forces fighting ISIS in the area suggests that an ISIS takeover of the city is likely to be used by the U.S. as a pretext for the expansion of Syrian territory, which has basically been happening the entire time as they continue to protect them instead. The possibilities of an ISIS takeover of Abu Kamal have been openly noted by influential U.S. think tanks, such as the Center for a New American Security, which recently mused that ISIS control over Abu Kamal would in fact serve U.S. interests in the region. You don't say. Very, very surprising. I think we're all shocked to hear that, as it would allow the U.S. occupied zone of Syria to spread by osmosis, as they say, quote, it's just so obvious. And that's what continues to frustrate me when people deny that this is what's happening. It is not only are their very own think tanks, people just dismiss that as saying, oh, well, we have papers and articles about all kinds of stuff. It doesn't mean it's all happening. But the point is that they're very clearly representing the fact that this is what serves the best U.S. interest. And now we're seeing that happen. And it's more than once now. Many, many times we've seen the U.S. actually hurt its own supposed efforts, its own backed forces to protect ISIS. And the point is that that's the entire premise for why they're illegally occupying Syria. And we've shown this many times over, that that's not what's really going on. It's there as an effort to overthrow the Assad government, which has been the plan for a very, very long time. We even just reported on Ben Rhodes, the national security advisor for the Obama administration, in an interview where he just admitted that the U.S. knowingly armed these exact groups. I mean, this stuff is all out there for everyone to see, yet the U.S. still maintains the opposite. And not only does that show you how willing they are to lie to you, right to your face, even if they may claim it's for a good intention or whatever. The point is that we've seen this time and time again, where they arm the very people they claim to be fighting, they hurt the very civilians they claim to be protecting, and at the end of the day, the country is left in an absolute ruin, and they move on to the next location with the most resources or the most geopolitical control or any number of reasons why we see this carried out. It's very frustrating to see, and it's something that is continually more and more obvious. So I often wonder why people choose to ignore it. We, interestingly enough, also have AlMazdaNews.com reporting that U.S. airlifts two ISIS commanders in northeast Syria, which I haven't been able to independently verify, but apparently their sources are claiming this happened. And I've seen verification of this happening in the past, either allowing ISIS to move into other territories so they're not, they don't get attacked by the U.S. forces claiming to be fighting ISIS, or actually literally airlifting ISIS commanders to new locations, which is exactly what they're reporting. So this doesn't surprise me, yet I should note that I have not independently verified this. But very clearly, we've shown more times than I can count that the U.S. in this specific situation in Syria are overtly protecting the very group they claim to be fighting. And that should really frustrate you more than anything. Moving on to the next story, coming from the Chris Ken YouTube channel, pharmaceutical scientist shot dead in front of daughter while camping. What was he researching? Now, this is an interesting story that I just want to quickly note on because it's something that really stood out to me. I've done interviews in the past with people like Aaron Elizabeth and discussed this weird correlation between holistic doctors being, you know, showing up dead with very suspicious circumstances, more than is just a coincidence as far as I'm concerned, especially when you dive into each case and see how suspicious each specific case is. But this rings true with the recent case we talked about of Timothy Cunningham, who worked for the CDC, who just showed up dead in a river they supposedly searched just before that. Very, very weird with all of the story, with all the information around that case and the fact that he was working on these Ebola and Zika cases and just all this weird information, and the way it all went down seemed very suspicious from the get-go. And then he just shows up dead way down the line in a place they already searched. Very, very odd. And now we're seeing this. Apparently this was a gentleman who worked for, he was a pharmaceutical scientist who worked on apparently alternatives to vaccines. Or rather, he worked with vaccines, but he was researching specifically alternatives to vaccines, which is already a very highly controversial subject. But as Chris gets into in the video, which he always does a fantastic job, diving through the information on what it was really about. As he said, the information involved in his research is very complicated, but it breaks down to the simple concept that he was working on a different style of vaccine that would really challenge what's going on today, but in a lot of ways simply make it less dangerous, more effective. And they point out in many different cases that essentially that means less side effects. And there's a huge market for how, when I've talked about this many times, that you take these drugs and then you need more drugs to combat the side effects and so on and so on. And then you could even argue, and they make the interesting point, that the way they work today is that these drugs are put in your body in such massive amounts because you don't always absorb it all. And the point is you have to flood your body with this drug to be able to get enough to make it worth it. And it's apparently what he was working on was a very specific delivery system that would make that not necessary. You could deliver just the right amount, which would stop most of the side effects. So it's a very interesting case here. And I'm going to keep up on this and make sure to report more. But the way it all went down as well was very, very suspicious, how he was camping with his daughters. And apparently he was shot by somebody with no provocation. He wasn't robbed. Nothing happened to his daughters. And it just disappeared. It just seemed like there was absolutely no motive, which should always make you ask why. There was no motive here. This guy just showed up and shot a random person while camping and takes off. And sure, that's possible, but something felt wrong here. And it also triggered my interest when I realized that the mainstream media was very clearly trying to frame this as a dangerous area. And as Chris says, apparently there was one other shooting in the distant past, and their report was another shooting in this dangerous area, basically framing it that way to make it seem like it was just a bad area, which was not the case. So why are they doing that? Someone on high is basically telling them to make this seem that way, which should always make you, should trigger your skepticism, your concern for what's really going on. So just wanted to note on that story, keep an eye out for it, just like we did with the Timothy Cunningham story, which I'm pretty convinced there was some foul play involved there. We should keep track of this one, but it's just one I wanted to point out for you to keep track of. Moving on to the next story and the final story of the day, coming from ZeroHedge.com, Trump says, wow, as Supreme Court upholds Trump travel ban. Now, this is another one that I just wanted to quickly touch on, because the most important aspect here is that this is yet another story being forced into this partisan discussion which is really not about that. Trying to make it about either, you know, it's a Muslim ban, which is essentially not true, especially in regard to the fact that it applies to a country like Venezuela. I mean, there's Muslims in every country, but the point is and there's also many other countries that are predominantly Muslim that are not on this ban. So to simply frame it that way is part of the deception, and they want us to get enraged about this. But I mean, there's a whole discussion to be had about bans like this in general, and about how it restricts free movement and all kinds of different things that I believe in. But the real point that I want to get at in this is that all of these countries on this ban, almost all of them predominantly are countries that have been manipulated by US imperialism, by Western imperialism. And the point is that it's very, very, it's just wrong to say that these people that are fleeing their countries because of the actions of the US government are somehow not allowed to seek asylum in the very country that caused the problems. I mean, the list that we have here that I'm looking at right now is Venezuela. Very clearly, the US is involved there. We've shown that many times over, creating the very unrest that's happening. Libya, which we know is very clearly due to what the US did and just took off and allowed the very extremists they armed to take over it, just wreak havoc and run a slave trade now. We're talking about Syria, Iran, Yemen, Somalia, Chad, North Korea, all these countries that the US is directly involved in manipulating and causing unrest to suit its own needs. That's the point we need to take away here. That there's a reason these countries are on a ban, whether it's to apply more geopolitical pressure by the US imperialistic efforts to just put their thumb on them even further. This is not just about left versus right, which is what it's always coming down to today. That's very important to understand. We need to see that there's bigger plan at play here, and we can't be caught up in all of the manipulation that's involved. That's very important. Overall, this is just another issue being put into this partisan box to divide us. That's what it really comes down to, which allows them to do what they want. If we're screaming at each other, not only does the issue we're screaming about move ahead independent of what either side wants, all the really important stuff they don't want us talking about also moves forward near unacknowledged, because we know the mainstream media propaganda outlets, who have long since given up trying to appear nonpartisan, which the job used to require, will never talk about what they are told to ignore. By giving the masses two sides of a fake argument, getting either side emotionally involved, and letting us loose on each other, they no longer have to worry about the majority standing against their imperialistic policies. Not that it would stop them today anyway, but the difference would be that the world would see the current power establishment for what it truly is, an oligarchy, a regime in every sense of the word that operates independent of those they pretend to serve, to maintain an air of respectability and moral authority. And many in the world long ago recognized and saw through this facade, and more are beginning to see it as well. But as long as they can get the masses invested in the system, even if just to attack one another, the real America will continue to be a mirage of what it could be, should we choose to shake ourselves free of this hypnotic and deceptive dance we have been tricked into thinking was of our own creation. It might have been at one point, but the music has changed. And as soon as we stop and look around, it becomes quite clear we are no longer even dancing. They have stolen this country from us, and we are too enraged to even notice. So for all of our sakes, stop dancing and look around. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.